Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Notwithstanding the Occupy movement's takeover of the Oakland port, you may have noticed there is a little less interest lately, or at least the Occupy movement seems to have started to enter winter hibernation. They say that they are working on renewing themselves for a growling spring awakening, a re-Occupy movement, an Occupy 2.0, just in time for the election season and for May Day. And lest you think I'm exaggerating, you know, certainly that the revolution is core to Occupy Wall Street's mission. I was just looking at the OccupyWallStreet.org's website, and their new banner atop the site is a raised fist with the slogan, "The revolution continues worldwide." And then a couple of words later, the subtitle continues, "The only solution is world revolution." So I thought it might be interesting, maybe constructive, for you to do a little thought experiment here. If you, my dear listeners, were developing a slogan related, ideally related to jobs, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, the show is mainly about career, but, you know, a slogan for Occupy 2.0, what would it be? I mean, the slogan, "We're the 99%, was clever, and it absolutely has caught on. But there are even people who are sympathetic with the Occupy movement have been critical of the fact that its message, indeed the whole movement's focus, seems to be too diffuse. What would your Occupy 2.0 slogan be? Again, ideally related to jobs, but if you can, we'll take your other ideas. But what if we're all about trying to be even-handed and circumspect on this show? So what if you are against the Occupy movement? Let's say you think the occupiers are a bunch of lazy, liberal, brainwashed potheads looking for an excuse to not look for work. And you believe that capitalist America offers the best hope for upward mobility. If you were at an Occupy 2.0 encampment, or even a 1.0 encampment, you'd probably be holding up a placard that says, "Occupy a desk." What slogan, again, ideally related to jobs, would you propose for counter-Occupy 2.0? That's the question. This morning on Work with Marty Nemko, what slogan, especially on jobs, would you propose for Occupy 2.0 or counter-Occupy 2.0? So, revolutionaries and counter-revolutionaries alike, the number to hear to call at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW with your slogan, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for your call-in slogans, I've got somebody here, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, member of the State Superintendent of Schools Cabinet, and my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, is here. Barbara Nemko, do you have a jobs-related Occupy slogan for us?
I do. Of course, I have to say I hate slogans. And half the problem is they work to a point. We try to put everything in these stark black and white terms, and nothing is black and white.
Look how Barack Obama used the word change. That single word probably did more to improve his candidacy than all the long-winded speeches that any of them could give. So all our lines are lighting up here, but before,
I'll give you my one favorite side. My favorite Occupy slogan would be, "Lost my job, found an occupation."
I like that. Lost my job, found an occupation.
My anti would be become the 1%, work hard.
Okay. I'll give out the phone number one more time, even though almost all the lines are lighted up. If you have a slogan that you would like to propose for Occupy 2.0 or counter Occupy 2.0, the number here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. And to the phones, welcome to the show. What's your slogan?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Bill in Daly City. I'm not sure if mine is pro or con Occupy, but it's a little idealistic. I would say, want me to go away? Hire me.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
That's kind of both. Did you know, by the way, that a number of Wall Street executives came down from their office and went to Zuccotti Park last week, and they offered jobs to people, and they got almost no take. One woman who actually had a PhD in biology did get hired, you know, right off the street, off the Occupy Zuccotti Park, but they offered a number of jobs, and people said no. And, you know, I don't know if that's because they don't want to be part of the system, and the capitalist system sucks, and they don't want a job, or because they were afraid they were going to fail, or they really didn't want to work.
Or were they very low-level jobs that didn't pay well?
I know they were Wall Street jobs. I can't answer that
interesting
question.
But I love Bill's slogan. That's fabulous.
Repeat it one more time for everybody.
All ties in with the question, what do they want?
Yeah.
Repeat your slogan one more time.
Want me to go away? Hire me.
I love it. Okay.
That is fabulous.
Bill, thanks very much for your call. Let's go right back to the phones. What's your slogan? Hello. It's you. Are you there? I guess not.
Changed your mind.
We'll go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's your Occupy or counter-Occupy slogan? Are you there? Hello.
All power comes through the barrel of a gun.
Oh, so you're part of the, you know, I know the anarchists have a strong presence in the Occupy movement. So you're promoting a kind of a violent revolution anarchist approach to this. Is that what you're saying?
I'm promoting a bottom up, that the people make the decisions and the 1% have to get out of the way.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call. All change occurs at the barrel of a gun. Well, you know what? Lest we dismiss him too quickly. When you think about what works, violence works. Look at the American Revolution. If we did not have the American Revolution, we might still be under a modern, an Anglican intolerant monarchy. If we did not have the Civil War, we might still have slavery. If we did not have World War II, we might have Nazism. If we didn't have the Watts riots, blacks might not have gotten as much money as they've gotten from the taxpayer. So, you know what? There is some legitimacy. It makes us, you know, public radio intellectuals bristle. But, you know, violence works. Barbara, you...
No, I absolutely understand his point. It's unfortunate. Usually the violence that works is as a result of someone else's violence. So World War II, we had to be violent to counteract the Nazis, and when we threw the tea into the sea...
But the Civil War was initiated by the North.
Right.
You know, we cannot... One of the things that concerns me about just many people is that they tend to be visceral. They have a knee-jerk reaction: war bad, peace good. And it's all of our visceral reactions. But what I have so beg in the workplace, politically or whatever, is to resist the visceral and to carefully do a cost-benefit analysis, a risk-reward analysis. There is very little that is more core to being successful in your work life and, frankly, anything else than that. And I think this last caller was a perfect example of that. I'm going to give out the phone number again. If you have a slogan for Occupy 2.0 or Counter-Occupy 2.0, especially related to anything related to work and jobs, because this show's focus is on career and jobs, great. But even if it's not, I won't turn you away. The phone number here at Work with Marty and Barbara, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'm going to follow what you said. I'm going to offer one of mine before we go to the phones.
Okay.
One of my favorite Occupy slogans for 2.0 and my favorite counter-Occupy. I think while it sounds snarky, it gets the point across. How about human need, not corporate greed, is one. Another that I would use, because I'm, you know, one of the things that the movement's anger is about all the student loans. They feel they've gotten BS phony advertisement from the colleges, showing pictures of well-employed people or anecdotes of well-employed people. And then they teach courses in large lecture classes really cheaply. And then there's no surprise the student learning is bad and people are not getting jobs. What I would say is for an Occupy 2.0 slogan, sue your you. Rhymes work very well.
What I find interesting is that it's always about corporate greed and never about government or even the public sector. I mean, you mm-hmm. see right now where the regents are talking about giving raises to the presidents at UC and top administrators, and you have to wonder what they're thinking. And I do get tired of the, oh, well, we'll lose this great talent. I think there's other great talent out there that would work
for
less.
Happy. And, you know, when you really think about the hypocrisy of universities, because in their classes, all they talk about is socialism. I'm listening to a course right now on John Steinbeck, and all they're talking about is they genuflect before Steinbeck, who really wants the socialist revolution, and it's really clear he does, and is willing to exaggerate the facts of what the Oklahoma Dust Bowl situation to argue for the socialist revolution. So you've got all the courses in history and political science and American studies and economics all focusing on redistributing the wealth to the poor. And when it comes time to taking care of number one, the administrators have fat salaries and want ever more, even in a declining economy.
Right.
So absolutely sue your you or diplomas don't work as advertised would be a slogan I would put on a 2.0. But now I want to be fair on the counter side. I do like the existing slogan, occupy a desk, because there is, I know, you know, I've spent a little time at the Oakland Occupy, and, you know, while some of them truly are motivated primarily by political activism and a deeply held view that America would be far better if we'd redistributed more wealth from the wealthy to the poor, there are a lot of people who are there to kind of hang out and look for a politically acceptable excuse to not look for a job. So there's that. And so the counter Occupy slogans that I would like to talk about, in addition to occupy a desk, is you hate profit and you want us to hire you? So I like that one.
Okay, I think we should see. We've got a lot of people who have called in.
All right. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's your Occupy 2.0 slogan or your counter Occupy 2.0 slogan? Hello, it's you.
Hi.
You're not there. Next line. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's your slogan?
Hi. It is 90% redistribution now.
90% redistribution now. Okay.
My feeling is that about 90% of wealth and ability is inherited, and that society should reflect that. And the 10% could account for, you know, your individual initiative, but that's about the only part of wealth that can be, you know, legitimately ascribed to your own work.
Well, you said something very interesting, and I want to ask you a follow-up question. You said 90% of wealth is either inherited and ability is inherited, and 10% is the hard work.
So, well, that's kind of shooting from the hip. I mean, I'm not...
Right, I know. We're just playing here. This is a conversation. Yeah. This is talk radio. This is not a PhD dissertation. So if we redistributed 90%, that's a big redistribution.
Yeah.
And we took that away from the people who are, let's just accept your premise, that really intelligent people, whether it be genetics or it be their early environment or their early schooling, if we take 90% of their resources away from corporations, from the rich, successful people who are, you know, professors and presidents and, you know, college presidents and the corporate people, will there be a lot of suffering, because we worry about a brain drain? Won't there be not money to invest in new innovations, new ideas, create new businesses? We're going to give people money to people who will have less ability to do that. Do you think that's a fallacious argument?
I do. I think people who have talent and ability will want to use that no matter what. And to a lesser than 90% number, you could see in Japan, for example, corporate executives make, you know, much, much less than they do here, yet they're still hard charging, you know, hardworking individuals.
Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with that.
Well, that's the same point about not giving the university administrators more money, because they say there'll be a brain drain. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting really is, you know, in the nonprofit sector that's supposed to be so holy, there are so many volunteers working for nothing and others working for $30,000. But if you look at the executive, the directors of development, the assistant executive director, the executive directors of, not, I'm not talking about small startup nonprofits, but I'm talking about, you know, the big ones like the, you know, Nature Conservancy and the Marilyn Wright Edelman's Children's Fund or whatever, or certainly the United Way, they're making $300,000-$500,000. If they really cared enough about the poor and helping people, they would take $30,000 salaries and give it to the charity, but they don't do it. In the end, it's really easy to talk redistribution. It's a lot harder to sacrifice your money. And I got to praise my wife. You have refused, am I correct, or you give 5% of your salary right back to the students? Is that correct? You don't take it?
Yes, I take money off the top of my salary every month that goes into a superintendent's fund that gives me some flexibility when kids have needs that we can't meet within the system. I can do that, medical needs or whatever.
Yep. Okay, Barb, you were going to say something else.
Yeah, it's funny because you were talking about the people who talk a good game but don't walk it. Hollywood is the perfect example.
God.
They are the most liberal, but whenever they can, they will move the movie production out of this country because labor costs are too high and they'll go up to Canada and shoot movies.
Well,
so how do you make all that pitch on television for how generous you are and then you do what you can to screw the workers in the United States?
I got to say that Barbara Streisand is the one who drives me crazy. You know, I hate to be honest, I'm Jewish and I don't like to necessarily put down Jews any more than they're already being put down, but she is horrible. She is the most vocal for every liberal cause, and she has a $50 million pink diamond collection that does nothing other than sit in a case. She lives in the most fabulous waterfront estate in Malibu, estimated at worth, I don't have the exact number, but I imagine $30, $50 million. How come she's not living in a hovel when there are poor people that she's advocating for?
She doesn't have to live in a hovel.
Or a middle-class house. And give the money to the people she sings to care about.
I'm not sure that even if she gave away her property and her house and she lived in just a $2 million house, that would be such a terrible come down.
Exactly. That's what we need to ask all of the 99ers on both the left and the right and say, how can you live with yourself in living in super mansions and having five Lexuses and fancy pink diamond collections when you are preaching the importance of redistributing the wealth, and you're in support of the Occupy movement? Dr. Dre, who is worth $10 zillion, has created a whole line of T-shirts and other stuff to for the Occupy movement. He's worth millions. I haven't seen him give his money to the poor. He started a T-shirt line so he can make more money, but I digress. I thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
All our lines are lighted up, so let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your Occupy or Counter-Occupy 2.0 slogan, especially related to work?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi.
Just a few comments. United Focus does bring change, and that's the importance to your issue. Violence does not unite.
It doesn't unite, but it stopped the Nazis.
But it brings change.
And it stopped slavery, and it stopped the cruel...
Martin Luther King brought peace to the African-Americans also, and Gandhi, and to... Proselytized violence is beyond my ken.
I understand.
It really is. To even begin to talk that violence can bring anything is so, I don't know, it just turns my stomach.
Well,
so
I don't think anyone was advocating it. It was merely a statement of fact. It does create change.
So I'd like to listen to you. I'd like to understand your position. So it was 1939, and you were Neville Chamberlain, and you were Winston Churchill, who are the two adversaries, and you had to make a decision whether you would fight the Nazis or let them go. Would you advocate for letting them go?
Make the comparison of Nazism and the anti-Semitic situation and the murder of 3 million Jews. Of course, that's afterwards. But here is a focused one person who, if we didn't take action, then we'd all be in trouble. But here you have 25 different opinions who want change and can't decide. That's what this issue is all about. How can the Occupy movement unite a statement to bring the idea that everybody wishes to express? Everybody's wish to have change in getting a job, in improving education, stopping the fracking that is going on, eliminate Republicanism in the Senate, it's just we're in such the most difficult life situation in my 70 years.
Okay. I could easily go off on a conversation about whether all wisdom does reside left of center, but I think it's off topic, and the show needs to focus more on career and work. So I'm going to thank you for your call. All our lines are lighted up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your slogan for Occupy 2.0, especially as it relates to jobs?
Okay, I wouldn't be at, I would not be at the protest, but my slogan would be to occupy the social entrepreneurship world, which really addresses people's needs and can really make people money at the same time.
I like that myself. Yeah, social. That's the triple bottom line notion, that if you always think social entrepreneurship is a vague term, but if we simply say, is this product net going to be the product itself is going to improve people without despoiling the environment too much? Is it treating its employees and customers fairly? And is it good for the planet? That's probably pretty good. Make sense?
Exactly, Marty. And if a lot of the people going to these Occupy protests would be involved in that or would be trained in that.
I love that. So your slogan would be Occupy social entrepreneurship.
Yes.
Love it. Thanks very much for the call. All our lines are lighted up. Let's keep going back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What is your Occupy 2.0 or Counter Occupy 2.0 slogan?
I believe that could be me.
It is.
I'm not looking at anybody's checkbook, so I don't know who gives what to whom. But I will give you one person. Her name is Roma Gary, came into wealth and has written a book and teaches rich people how to share.
Yes, there's a
wonderful thing.
Yes, that's called...
Now, here's a very doggerel-like, since you're asking for something in a slogan form.
Okay.
If you've got it, less is more. Share it. You'll like it.
Very good.
You know what that reminds me of?
Thank you for the call very much, Shan.
Somehow, I had missed hearing this on the news, but apparently there's been a wave of people going into stores like Kmart and Walmart and asking for some family that's put Christmas gifts away on layaway, particularly if there are toys involved, so they have young children, and just anonymously paying off their layaway. That's the kind of pay it forward that if everybody in this country who could afford it would take themselves today to Walmart or Kmart, we could do a huge good for so many families, and not just the fact that they would not have to pay off the presents, but imagine the feeling that people would get from knowing that there are so many people out there who want to help and do something good.
Okay. And I would like, before we go to the phones, I've been promising I'd be giving some of my Occupy and Counter Occupy slogans. This one, I'm a little embarrassed about. It's not mine. I found it. Somebody was actually holding the placard. I don't quite agree with it, but it's certainly got the, it's very memorable. And it's Eat the Rich. And on the counter side, here's one I actually did come up with. A day without corporations. No medicine, no refrigeration, no phone, no computer, no transportation, even your bicycle, and no poster board for that poster you're carrying.
I'll give you my two favorites.
Okay.
Are you feeling it trickling down? And then on the other side, this one is from Margaret Thatcher. The problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money.
Okay, well, we're not running out of other people's calls and their slogans. So I won't give out the phone number, but welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your Occupy 2.0 or Counter Occupy 2.0 slogan?
The road of hope is to take the present moment and fill it with merciful love. That's Bishop Tuan, Vietnamese Catholic who was imprisoned for many years in Vietnam, and he just was thrown out because he just converted so many people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly appropriate for this Christmas season. It's certainly consistent with that message, even though he's not a Christian. It's certainly consistent with that. Thank you very much for the call.
Very beautiful. I like that one.
Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's your Counter Occupy 2.0 or Occupy 2.0 slogan?
Let's see. I got two. Capitalism kills.
Okay.
And all property is theft. And I can't believe that Barbara just asked people to go to Walmart and buy products. They put poison on the kids' toys and in the baby formula. But that's an example of how out of touch you two people are. And that is the slogan is eat the rich before the rich eat you.
Okay. So all property is theft. What, as you look at the various socialist and communist experiments where property was viewed as theft, it's the Marxist principle that all property should be the property of the state and that all, everything should be shared. What, as you look back on that, do you feel they just did it wrong, and if they did it right, socialism or capitalism would work, or do you think selfishness eventually would prevail among people?
No, I'll tell you, it's not Marxist. It's anarchist, and it's responsible anarchy. It avoids a power elite being in charge, because power is addictive and corruptive, and it always turns on against the people. So if leadership is always temporary and transitional, and it comes from below, and you don't have a steering committee or a permanent representative group in Congress or wherever, you avoid that.
Well, I want to comment on that. It's very interesting. You know, what happens is, first of all, it's a very optimistic vision of human nature. And it is one we would all like to aspire to. But I have been watching the Occupy movement pretty carefully, and I've watched its evolution. It started exactly as you said, completely anarchist, no steering committees or whatever. But if you'll notice what has gone on in the last few weeks, they have created exactly that. They have steering committees, because in the end, if it is just individuals acting individually, there tends to be so much chaos that not enough good happens.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Marty. The Occupy movement is being corrupted and hijacked by the Democratic Party and celebrities and everybody else who wants to get a little bit of, good, nice feeling from it. But the Occupy movement has to be always from the bottom up replenished. And as soon as a leadership steering committee comes in, it has to be overturned.
Do you have you in all of world history, from ancient times to today, and in all the 200 countries of the world, is there one example of where a true anarchy, where there is no steering committees, has worked? I know you're like Guy Fawkes back in the 16th century, but
Guy Fawkes didn't have an anarchist thing. You're talking, what you're looking for is Barcelona, Spain, in 1937, when the workers ran the whole city for about 4 weeks until Franco came in with the church and wiped them out. And I think in France, it was called the Commune in 1759, was it? Or I don't know the year, but there was another period where the workers ran the city, and they had workers' councils, and they booted out all the bourgeoisie and the leadership. And we can do it. We can run this world a hell of a lot better than it's being run now by this manager ownership class.
And you think it could sustain? You've talked about two examples in all of history of 200 countries, but there's a tendency for people to want leaders, for there to be coordination. Are you confident, you're speaking with great passion, are you confident that sustainably over decades or, you know, a long period of time, that country could sustain itself simply through pure individual anarchy?
Well, we're about to find out, Marty, because we're taking it back, and you and your class are going into the dustbin of history.
Well, thank you. Yeah, hopefully not, but you're going into the list of previous callers, so I thank you very much for the call.
It's Barbara, interesting, because I think it is such an optimistic view of people. Somehow, no matter what economic level, there are people who want more than other people, and they're always willing to take it from them, whether they do it politically or they do it with guns or they do it in whatever way. But there are always thieves and pirates and people who want more, and they're willing to take it from someone who has anything that they would like to have. So I don't see how I think the whole reason that you have all of this government structure is to try to protect from a lot of that.
I also think that there are that. While we wish, and I wish in an ideal sense, that everyone was motivated by a kind of a world good orientation. What could I do that would be good for the world? But I do think that it doesn't have to be a majority, even if a small percentage of people are motivated by a desire for power, and if they're smart and charismatic, those are the ones who run for president, those are the ones who become dictators. It only takes 1 out of 100, because most people are sheep. most people really are not, you know, going to fend very well for themselves on their own. It is hard to make it in the world. And without a system that, for example, provides for the have-nots, if left to their own individual anarchy, they will be people with no health care. They will starve. They will not. If they're left on their own, how are they going to make a living? Where are they going to get their resources?
Well, they're going to tell you that that's the situation now. There are people without health care, and there are people who are hungry.
If we look at the United States of America in its now blend of capitalism and socialism, you will see that everybody in one way or another gets health care.
And food.
And 98 or 99% of people have TV sets, have cell phones.
They have smartphones.
They have clothing. And so is it clear that anarchy would help the poor people, the proletariat, the way the caller said? But that's a little off the side of the book.
Let's go back to the phones.
Do you have another, either an Occupy slogan for 2.0, especially related to jobs, and an counter-Occupy slogan that you'd like to share?
The people are too big to fail.
Okay.
And the anti-one, we've created millions of jobs. How many have you created?
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is your slogan either for Occupy 2.0 or counter-Occupy 2.0? Turn down your radio, please.
Hello?
Yeah, could you turn down the radio, please?
Sure. Mine is ethics for all.
There's a good one.
See, I really like that because, you know, I guess I'm constitutionally a moderate. And I do think the thing, more than the capitalist system, which has its weaknesses, no question, what is destroying this country is the lack of ethics. It's the Jerry Sanduskys of the world. It is the lying corporate America. We use corporate America every day, whether we're riding our bicycle or the solar panels that no individual could create. No matter how progressive we are, the organic food not everything can be grown in your backyard. We are reliant on corporate America. The problem is what you said, the unethical corporate behavior, the destroying of the world, the treating workers like crap, the dishonesty with the public.
The unethical government behavior, the people creating laws and exempting themselves from the laws they've created.
Oh, that's unbelievable. But anyway,
I like
that's
that. Ethics for all.
Ethics for all. I like it. You have big thumbs up from both of us.
With the diversity of callers that have called in this morning, I don't think anyone could disagree with that one.
And yet it's not pablum because it is, that's a huge gap. It's not just something we can agree with, but yet it doesn't exist in our society. Every one of my job seekers, most of them, want to exaggerate on their resume. They want to make up a story that they're going to tell to their future employer. The word truth, it takes a back seat to expediency. It's true. 70% of college students cheat on exams. 45% of people cheat on their income tax. You know,
that's all.
It is a real problem. When you watch, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, but you watch politicians giving speeches, you know they're exaggerating the truth, they're deceiving, they're avoiding. Ethics for all, I just love it. Thanks a lot for the call. Back to the phones. We'll take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. You get the last slot, the honored last slot. What is your either Occupy 2.0 or Counter Occupy 2.0 slogan, especially if it relates to work?
Are you speaking to me?
I am.
Ah, great. I have two slogans and a comment.
Great.
One slogan, bring back the common good.
Mm-hmm. Mm, nice.
And the second one is win the hearts and minds of the 99%.
Okay, win the hearts. I have a question. I am agnostic on this question. Sometimes I believe that if we were more communitarian, to use that old Bronfenbrenner term from Cornell in the 60s, that if all of our minds were thinking, what could we do that we're going to yield the common good and put ourselves in the background and think that's the optimistic vision. But there is this piece of me that has, now I'm 61, and I've lived around the block a long time and have spoken to people who are very liberal, who profess liberalism, profess conservatism, and in the end, when push comes to shove, especially if they don't have a lot of money, they're going to take care of number one. I have a doctor client who really bothers me. He does procedures that are not really necessary. Why? He says, because my wife keeps nagging me. She wants a new wing in my house. That stands more in more contrast. That makes me worry And I'm a kid of the 60s, and there were communes at UC Berkeley where there were the collective houses, and they all started out with Kumbaya, and in the end, a lot of them broke up because somebody wanted to get out of doing the work that they were supposed to do. They wanted to get privileges. Are enough of us altruistic enough that if we just say, bring back the common good, won't that end up just allowing the nefarious among us to go and take advantage of the Kumbaya groups? What do you think about that?
I wonder about human nature in that way. Mm-hmm. But my answer to that, Marty, would be, why don't we change the incentive systems? Because people are going to do, yes, what's in their best interest. But if their best interest is to do what's right, and I'm talking about an incentive, you know, for an easy example of that would be in healthcare. This is an original thought, but if we incentivize people to be healthy, and there are all kinds of ways we can do that.
Those are great. We've heard about those. But when the rubber really meets the road is when it comes to hurt. Let's say you were a middle class person. You've been paying into the system. Let's say Obamacare. You're paying into the system for a long time, and now you're told that we need to provide free health care to 40 million Americans who are poor. And as a result, that we have the same number of doctors and nurses, but now they got to take care of 40 million more people. Your health, your life could be endangered. Do you think the nation as a whole really is going to embrace risking their lives to take care of 40 million people who, as a group, may not have been as hardworking, may not have been contributing as much to the system? Or will people rise up and say, that's unfair?
You know, I think it has to be put in the context of what else is going on. I mean, we certainly see so much money is going in other places that it's hard to just isolate the situation you're talking about. But we are the country that came up with Social Security, with what are called entitlements, which a word which I think is really off. But I think, you know, we do realize that the more of us that are well off, the better our country is.
Well, that we can certainly agree on.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, we can certainly agree with that. I'm looking at the clock here. I want to make sure we have some time for people to call in for 3-minute career makeovers, because that's always an important part of the show, because I don't want to just talk theory and models. I need to help human beings who are right now struggling. In my 26-year career as a career counselor, they're struggling like never before. I don't care if they say the unemployment is down to 8.6. That's because millions and millions of people are giving up. I am down there in the trenches. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call. Barbara, I want to give you, though, the last word. Is there a pro-Occupy 2.0 or a counter-Occupy 2.0 slogan that we haven't mentioned that I think would be useful to mention? And then I want to change topics to helping people.
No, I'm out of slogans.
Okay. One that I like, because I'm not anti-capitalist, but I am sure as hell against the dishonest kind of capitalism. So one of my Occupy 2.0 would be kill crony capitalism.
Hear, hear.
Okay. And my anti would be, you hate profit and you want us to hire you? So that's what I would do. Now, let's turn to you, my dear listeners. If you have a work problem, practical, your specific problem, maybe it's a business you want to start. You don't know if it's worth starting. You're scared. Maybe you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, even though you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. Maybe you're on the job and you're having a huge problem with your boss. Maybe you're afraid of getting let go. Maybe you're furious. Maybe you're losing sleep at night about some problem related to work. I welcome your call. Now is the time. While we have lines open, this is the time to call. And Barbara and I'd be happy to help you. Also, one more little suggestion. So often, we think, if you're a job seeker, you think you're good at pitching yourself, telling your story. If you want to run your 15 or 30-second pitch, your job search pitch about, you know, what you're looking for and why you're looking and all that, run it by Barbara and me, and we'll give you the thumbs up. And we would say whether we'd be inclined to hire you or not. Or again, if you're starting a business, run your idea by me, and Barbara and I will tell you whether we would invest in your business. All those are good reasons to call. Work with Marty and Barbara. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415 841-4134. We have one more call on the line. Let's take that one more call, I think. So can you put that call on the line, the one that's on line too? Thanks. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's your idea?
Yeah, quick slogan.
Sure.
Let's unite as citizens and amend Citizens United.
Let's amend citizens. Let's unite as citizens. You know, I am, again, this constitutionally moderate person.
You can tweak that.
I think uniting ends up being of great value. You can't do everything as an individual. But if everything is as a group, we tend to, like in the workplace, I've seen so many workplaces where we do everything by committee, and so whatever gets agreed to is the lowest common denominator. I think we need to balance individualism and encouraging individual on the one hand, and yes, united collectivism on the other. I am constitutionally a moderate. You'll forgive me for taking that moderate.
Well, you're going off on a tangent. But the point is that the Citizens United Supreme Court decision was a bad decision.
Oh, why don't you educate us to what that is, please?
Well, Citizens United basically wipes out any controls over political contributions, especially in terms of making them transparent.
Oh, I see. Right. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more.
I really think you would agree. Just as an analogy, if you ran an organization, whether it was NPR or something else, a position of power like a politician or senator would be, and you could take money without accounting for where it came from.
I agree
from,
with you completely.
You know, as a tax lawyer said to me, the truth is follow the money. It can't
right.
lie.
Exactly.
And that's what we don't have, and that's what we need to change.
Agree 100%. I appreciate that. That's a great way.
And last comment?
Yes, please do.
For what is lacking in Occupy overall, and all the news coverage we see, and it just gets thrust in our face from the internet and television and radio, there are no orators or decent speeches made today. I suggest anyone YouTube the Mario Savio speech, and in 1 minute, you'll hear a thundering oratory that is completely unmatched. Media gives us stories about riots and drum circles and cook tents and how, look, they set up a campsite. But it's there's no actual oratory, and it's a real vacuum, kind of surprising.
Great point.
You're right.
Great point. You know, that, I think, is the public speaking is the most important course they don't teach in school. Talk about elitism. They're busy teaching geometric theorems. They're busy teaching the War of the Roses. They're busy teaching French 3, and they allow people to graduate without basic public speaking skills, even if it's just giving a three-minute presentation at a meeting. Great point. Thank you very much for the call. All our lines are lighted up. I'm sensing that these are probably more like career help stuff, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. So I'm a recent college graduate, and I worked for a few months, and due to budget reasons, they let me go. And so now I'm on the market again, and I'm just wondering, what more can I do? You know, I tailor each resume and cover letter specifically for the position that I'm applying for the positions that I would love. I go above and beyond, and I even make a presentation. And I'm wondering, though, what is the extent that I have to go? Because people say persistence wins, but they don't want candidates to keep calling. They don't want candidates to show up. So what can I do? Should I just wait?
No.
For a phone call?
No. The reality is, if you're just one of the zillion, we have an oversupply of college graduates now. The world has changed. In 1970, we only sent the top 40% of our high school graduates to college. Now we send 70. So we've got ever more college graduates at the same time as corporations are able to offshore part-time and automate jobs. So you're never going to get a job, especially with not any experience, by answering an ad, because as soon as they place an ad, they get 100 applicants and they get somebody who's got experience already. So you're never going to get that first job. The first job you're going to get is through your existing or a new network. That is, your existing friends, relatives, people you knew at college, alumni, whatever, people you know from church, people, those people, or if your network is bad, if like so many of my clients, you do just have not focused on schmoozing and networking and building relationships, you need to start. So what kind of job are you looking for?
I've been applying to different types of jobs.
But what would be ideal for, you know, what would be your ideal, not your ideal either eventual career or your launch pad job for launching that career? Do you know what your goal would be?
Yeah, well, I know that I want to go into news. And so I interned all throughout college, and unfortunately, I am not in the same city where I was when I was in college, so a lot of my network actually, it doesn't reach as far.
Right. You said music?
I'm sorry?
You said music?
Music? No, no.
No, news.
Oh, news. You want to be in news. Okay.
No, yes, news. I want to be in news.
Oh.
And people have mixed feelings about that. Some people say, oh, you should pursue sports, not news. The news is a dying industry. But I found that it's very difficult because I'm in a new area, I have to essentially start over. And
okay, here, let me interrupt you. Here's the deal. Yes, because of the internet, news has become something that is, that there's so many citizen journalists. And again, this is the advantage and the disadvantage of empowerment of the people. The technology enables individuals to blog, create videos, embed themselves. And so there's an endless amount of journalism out there. And so, and I'm going to be just really straight with you. I'm a columnist at the Washington Post now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Washington Post is about as prestigious as you get. Do you know how much I get paid for my column?
Zero. No idea.
Zero.
Oh, wow.
Zero. And this is the Washington Post. Yeah. So because the media outlets know that people love to create, they want to be in news, they want to do those things, they are, again, you know, like all the media, we're hypocritical. They talk, their articles talk about treating labor fairly, but they will pay zero if they can get away with it. Yeah. So it is, sure, there still are 1,000 people in America who are 2,000 who are making a good middle-class living in journalism. But if you're going to be one of them, you must be truly extraordinary. You must pick a niche that is an uncommon niche that is of great value. Whatever it is, you're going to be the queen of really understanding fuel cells and really advanced environmental alternative energy technologies. But if you're just going to be this news journalist, there's just so many people. Or unless, I mean, if you graduated from Harvard and went to Columbia Journalism School and got the master's in journalism from Columbia, then you're going to do fine because we continue to genuflect before degrees from prestigious places. But if you're not, then you must identify a niche and be just amazing. And you must create a network. You must call hundreds of leading, literally hundreds of leading journalists or editors for the publications you'd most want to work for and volunteer to be their slave, their research assistant, do the behind-the-scenes research. Everything I've just said reduces to one word, focus. If you are obsessively focused and if you've got talent, then you have a shot at succeeding. If you're not like that, then you're like, and if you like to write, and you, if you're not that focused or not that brilliant, then you got to settle for one of these more boring, let's call them socially responsible writing jobs, like writing ad copy for websites and stuff. What's your reaction to what I just said?
No, I think that's great advice. I mean, even for someone like, I don't necessarily want to do journalism. I like behind the scenes. I like news production, actually.
Okay.
And I'm assuming that advice can be translated to that.
Absolutely.
As well, right?
Well, then what I would do there is, since you like news production, I would urge you to produce some really wonderful packages that you create as a portfolio. We've been talking about Occupy today. Find an unusual angle. Maybe you could call your package The Search for the Great Orator in the Occupy Movement. And you go and you take your camera that's in your phone or whatever, and you go and you create this package and you send it to NPR, to PBS, and follow up with phone calls relentlessly. Beg for an internship. Internships are really important. It's a matter of saying, I have to be exceptional, because until the revolution comes, it is a competition. And only a small, and especially in a cool field like news, even production, only the very strongest will survive. It is Darwinian.
So I shouldn't be afraid of going back and doing unpaid internships. I should just go for it.
In a field like that, you certainly should. But I was on the Today Show. And when I was on the Today Show, I was met by 30 interns at the Today Show. And they all looked the same. They were all a size 2. They were all wearing pencil skirts. They were all wearing cutesy, cute, adorable shoes. Their makeup were perfect. Their hair was perfect. And you know what? None of them were going to ever get a job, because all they cared about was looking good, getting coffee, and schmoozing with celebrities. There was one woman, who I was different. A young woman, she looked the same, but she, all she was doing was talking. I saw her running to the producers. Say, how can I help? What can I do? This, you know, I just pre-interviewed the guest, and she's got this great idea. She was so focused. She was so substantive. She is the one out of 30 who would stand out. In this economy and in a tough field like the media, it is that one out of 30 people who are is focused enough and talented enough who will prevail.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What is your question?
How do you get people to pay you for your work?
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I have written chapters on negotiation. I've written probably 30 articles on negotiation. And when the Washington Post asked me, do I want to write for them, would I want to write a column for them, I was so ecstatic. And then I said, what's the pay? They said, zero. And then I said, you know, really? At my stage, I've written over 1,000 articles, five, but all that other stuff. They said, I'm sorry, we are really under budget problems. You've got to take it or leave it. So fortunate I didn't need the money, so I said, I'll take it. But how do you get paid? I don't know.
Well, I'm a painter, and I had the problem of doing this amazing work for people,
right,
and then just basically having them cheat me.
Exactly.
Every excuse under the book. Even my own mother. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I have had so many clients tell me that. So we have, on the one hand, we have many of the callers to the show have been idealists. We need to have anarchy. We need to have power to the people, to the proletariat. But when in the real world that I have lived in, 80% of people are great. And 20% of people will espouse the most communitarian, socialist, liberal, progressive, use your term, views. And then when it comes time for money, they'll do what they can to screw you. I had a client recently who told me that I did a great job with him. And you know what he did?
What?
He was a long distance. He lives in Southern California. So we were working by Skype. And so I had his credit card number, charged his credit card, went through fine. The next week, I get what's called a chargeback from the credit card company saying he voided it. I found out that he did that for all his credit card bills because he simply didn't want to pay.
Huh.
You know, there are many good people, many outstanding people. There are a lot of people who are good and bad, and there are some who are horrible. And in a system that simply empowers the people and not select ethical leaders that we believe in and we can trust, there is a real risk that, you know, that it might not work as well as the optimist among us would like to believe.
How about working for free?
We do it all the time.
I know. It's the way. I think it's the way to solve this problem. If everybody would just help one another for free, a lot of this would be,
The key problem is the word everybody. Everybody is not enough people are going to be willing to work for free. And where are they going to get the money for food, for health care, for clothing, for housing, for communication, driving, even if we get out of our cars, who's going to pay for, a train is very expensive. You know, it's easy to say everybody work for free. It ain't as easy as we would like it to be. I want to thank you for the call. I want to try to help somebody else.
All right.
Question. I'm going to give out the phone number one more time. Only reason I want you to call is if you need career help. From Barbara and me. Barbara's sitting here, and she is a tremendous resource, the voice of common sense, uncommon sense. So if you would like either Barbara's input or my input on your work-related problem, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. How can Barbara and I help you? Hello. Are you there? You're not there, so let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. How can I help you?
Hi, I have a question. So I love your show, and I've been at a grassroots nonprofit for about 5 years, and it's been really amazing experience. I only have a bachelor's degree, but I've been able to sort of create 3 different positions, and now my title has a manager. But it's essentially, because it's a grassroots small nonprofit, I'm essentially doing about a little bit of 3 jobs.
Can I ask what your salary is? We were talking about how many people are asked to work so hard and so smart and get paid for. Can I ask what your salary is?
Oh, it's embarrassing. $44,000.
Exactly. Now, here you were, this person who got 3 promotions or doing 3 jobs in one, and you're getting $44,000, which after taxes is about $25,000 a year, which you cannot live in the Bay Area. Barely. You can, but it's really hard to live in the Bay Area in $25,000. And this is you, college graduate, it's, I mean, that is what I am seeing again and again. And I've never seen it before until the last few years. This is accelerating. You know, any of you who listen to the show for a long time, I've been on the show 23 years, whatever it is, you never heard me talk about or never heard callers talk about how many people were having to work for free or next to nothing. The world's changing.
You know, in addition to my job, you know, and I have a little bit of fundraising, a little bit of sort of communications marketing, and then volunteer management. In addition, I'm also doing, you know, volunteering and other things to try and build up my skills, because I'm not necessarily, you know, my job isn't necessarily investing in me the way that I would like. And so my question is that I've been there 5 years now, and I'm sort of, it's gotten to the point where I feel like I'm hitting my head on the ceiling, obviously.
Right.
But I'm sort of stuck because I can't figure out, you know, I have 60 or 70% of these three different jobs,
right?
You know, marketing, fundraising, and volunteering. That's a very low paying nonprofit.
Right. Well, here's there is an answer. There's no question. The lifeblood of everything in a capitalist society is money. And the people in nonprofits who make money are the fundraisers. So,
yeah.
What you want to do is take your fundraising skills to the next level. For example, get some expertise in what is called charitable remainder trust and other kind of deferred giving, because those are the big bucks. Then, you know, take a course, you know, in that online or read whatever, and then go get a job in a bigger nonprofit as an assistant director of development and have specific expertise, whether it be in donor database management, prospect research, cultivation. You know, the universities are the best place in the world to get a job in fundraising, because they have the most sophisticated fundraising operations. I like to tell the story. Every single student who ever has gone to a college, whether they dropped out or not, their name is in the database of what they call the development department. They call it development because they develop people from students to somebody who will leave the university money in their will. And they have somebody who's in charge of the database. They start to have events that are designed to not raise money in the beginning, but to start. They invest in people. They invite them to free events with great professors or to the ball game or whatever. And they invite you until you start giving money. And then they will start to ask for more money. It is all highly professionalized. And if you start to give more than 1,000, they assign something called a prospect researcher to you, who researches on who you are, what your emotional hot buttons are. What, you know, are you more subject to a soft sell or a hard sell? So, you know, that whole field, if you want to professionalize, you say you feel you're stuck and you've done some fundraising, get a job at a university, learn all about the art of development. It is highly, highly sophisticated.
And while you're learning, maybe make a deal with the group that you're working for that you get some percentage of what you bring
in.
There's
an ethical issue around that. You're not allowed to do that.
If you did it for a private?
Yep, you can't do it.
Oh,
I'm not quite sure I understand
why,
but do some learning about the real high end of fundraising, and that's your best shot. I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty and Barbara. And we are out of time. You got one more slogan for us? One more Occupy or Counter Occupy slogan?
I do not.
Because I'm trying to fill a little bit of time. All right. Then that is Work with Marty.
Sorry.
Thanks. That's Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And because it'll be Christmas Day, I'm going to give you my worker's version of the 12 days of Christmas and God knows what else. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.